When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast, is brought to you with a cleaner shave than ever. Ever before. Siobhan has stopped CGI digitally removing her moustache for each episode. And
finally.
Is now shaving that mo off thanks to our good sponsors over at DollarShaveClub.com. We'll be telling you more about their great products later on in the episode.
Can't wait.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey everybody, welcome to Serious Issues, a Whitley comic book podcast with your good friends, Andrew Levins and Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
Every week we read all of last week's comics and let you know which ones were good, which ones were bad, and which ones were in between.
Yes.
And I love those in-between comics the most.
Most of them are in between.
Really?
Wouldn't you argue?
Was that a spoiler warning? This episode of Serious Issues is brought to you by one special person. And that special person is one of our Patreon members. His name is Zachary Lipovac or Lipovac. There's one thing that I've appreciated from all of our listeners over in the European destinations. It's that they've let me know that I mispronounce names frequently and that almost all last names that have a C at the end,
yeah.
It's a ch sound. So I'm going to go out on a limb there. I'm going to go out on a lip. For my boy, Zachary Lipovac. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you would like to support the show too, you can head to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. And there you'll find an episode that we uploaded last week all about our favorite graphic novels that we've listened to recently. It's a Patreon exclusive. We do that once every couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually going to do another one of those next week.
Oh,
so
cool.
Smash okay. Some more graphic novels.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a Final Crisis discussion.
Yes. I need to finish that.
You haven't finished it ever.
No, I finished it, but my reread.
All right, cool.
I got halfway through and then I started reading Strangers in Paradise instead.
Oh, right.
Which is also good.
Amazing. We can talk about that too. But yeah, patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. If you want to support the podcast, a couple bucks will get you access to a whole bunch of bonus episodes in which we discuss many comics, just like the ones that we discuss in this one, except they're bigger because they're called graphic novels. But on this episode, we'll be talking about those little guys, which are just called single issues. And we get all of those single issues from King's Comics in Sydney.
And guys, guess where we are right now? I don't know if you can hear the beautiful sounds of statues being wrapped and beeping machines.
Yeah, that weird, and the voices that make up Siobhan's head, they've finally returned.
The screams of anguish.
She stopped seeing a shrink for 1 week and they've returned. we are back in the King's Comics office, so every 15 minutes you're going to hear three random beeps.
Yep.
Beep, beep, beep. We don't know which machine does it or why it does it. We just know that it does. And
there's no way to fix it.
We're going
to
hear interjections from previous guest, Jim.
Jim.
And also we're going to hear loud yelling from another previous guest, Wayne.
Yeah.
Who has already said in the first 50 minutes since I got here, give me a break Monday.
Our very own Garfield.
What are you doing over there, Wayne?
Dying.
Okay, dying. Great.
As are we all.
Packing orders, but like enormous orders, like filling big boxes full of like packing peanuts and statues. Like I could fit in the box that he's packing.
Absolutely.
Right now. We both could. Let's record the podcast in this box. It's settled. If you ever want to come and visit King's Comics and meet the various characters that we talk about every time we record here, you can find it at 310 Pitt Street, Pitt Street, Sydney.
Yep.
Or kingscomics.com.
Don't go to King Street. It's a mistake many people make.
King
That's
Street
not
Comics.
Why we're called King's Comics.
There is a.
It's because we're kings.
Oh no, it's not King Street. I'm just saying. So on this episode, we're going to be reviewing a bulk of the comics that came out last week. It was a smaller week than usual in terms of releases, but I feel like one in three comics was like double size.
There were a lot of annuals.
Some of them felt like we're going to talk about a bunch of them now because they're all number one. Some of them like felt like triple size.
Yeah, totally.
DC. Took the even though they when we review all of DC's regular issues later on in the episode, we have a grand total of one.
Yeah.
And even it is an annual, but it has a two on it instead of a one. Thus, it does not meet the requirements for being talked about in our opening segment. DC, it being a fifth week, just put out an onslaught of annuals and special collections. And so we're going to be talking about those right now in the first segment of the show, which is called First Things First, in which we review all of the numbers, all of the comics that came out last week that have had one on it. But guess what, Siobhan? Before we even do that, I've got one thing that I want to talk about. It's almost voting season time.
Oh my gosh.
Last year, one of the funnest things we did was to have a big serious issues awards.
Yeah.
The announcement of the awards themselves, that wasn't that fun.
That wasn't that good.
You can go back and listen to that 25 minutes. It was kind of fun, I guess.
But I was pregnant, so I wasn't drinking.
Right.
Which
I was
less fun.
I was drinking, and I was still not having that. Because basically, we decided it would be a great idea to do the announcement of all of our award winners from a bar in Sydney.
People bought old issues that we'd brought over from the King's Warehouse and basically ignored us. It was good.
We kind of like, I reckon there would have been 10 people out of, I don't know, 80 people in the room that cared about what we had to say. And it's just me yelling at the people that didn't care.
That was good.
And we got people complain about me, online. I'm not going to listen to this podcast anymore because that guy's so rude. I'm like, you would have been rude too if you were there.
Yeah, and it was mostly my little sister making the noise, turns out.
And also, if you know me personally, which I feel like a lot of you do now.
Rude.
Oh, yeah, but I do it with the biggest smile on my face. Butter would not melt in my mouth, whatever that fucking phrase means.
Yeah, isn't that a weird phrase?
It is a weird phrase.
That was very melty.
And you can vote for the weirdest phrase of 2017 in our awards. Let's go through all of the awards that we're going to be announcing the nominees of next week. And then you'll have two weeks to vote on them. And then we'll be announcing during Christmas. Our Christmas episode will be all about the awards. So the awards that you can vote for are Best Writer, Best Artist, Best Colorist, Best Ongoing Series, Best Mini Series, Best All Ages Series, Best Image Series, Best Marvel Series, Best DC Series, Best Other Publisher Series. We got Best Graphic Novel, Best First Issue, Best Comic Book Event, The Saddest Moment in Comics this year, The Best Cullen Bunn, number one, which many of which could be the saddest moment. The Best Comic Book Movie, The Best Comic Book TV Show, and The Best Character of the Year.
So it's like the Eisners, but way more important.
Yep, exactly. Way more coverage.
Yep.
Bigger
trophies.
That's right, way bigger. If you listen to those, if you want to have your say, now is the time to let us know. You can either send us an email to seriousissues@kingscomics.com with what your favorite writer, artist, colorist, series, or saddest moment of the year is, and we'll take that into consideration. Because what happens is, Siobhan and I are going to pick like six nominees for each award, and then you'll be able to vote from those. And I know a lot of people are like, my favorite comic isn't in here. That's fine. Start your own comic book podcast and start your own awards. But keep listening to us because we need those fucking downloads. seriousissues at kingscomics.com, or I might even start a thread over on our Serious Issues Facebook group, which you can join over at facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast, and you'll be able to join the discussion there.
Nice.
Awesome. Now, on with the show. First things first, let's review. Talk about all the issues that had a number one on them. We've established that DC put out the most, so let's talk about these DC books. I want to talk about a little book. Actually, it was a big book. It was a what are these ones called again?
It's got a spine.
It's got a spine. What are the spine comics, Jim? What are they called again? Jim's gone. We'll never know what these comics are called. It has a thicker spine, and it's called like some kind
like
of format.
Bound.
Hey, what are the bound comics called, Wayne? Oh man, why do we even come back here?
Special format, whatever.
Whatever. It's a special format book. They'll go with that right now.
You could put it on your shelf without even bagging and boarding it.
Batman Creature of the Night, Book One, written by Kurt Busiek with art by John Paul Leon. Kurt Busiek, of course, best known these days for Astro City, but he previously wrote an excellent take on Superman that came out, I guess, a decade and a half ago called Superman's Secret Identity. And that was about a boy whose name was Clark Kent, mm-hmm. who was a kind of like a fan of the character of Superman. Superman only existed as a character in that world. But as he got older, he started manifesting the powers of Superman. And so over the course of four issues, we checked in on this character of Clark Kent and how he lived with the powers of Superman. Hmm. And it was, have you read it?
No.
It's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's like, it's so good. And like, I mean, one of Astro City's strengths is that he will take like a known kind of like, you know, comic book legend or character and do his take on it. And it's always like so simple and just great. Mm. And so when I heard about this book, Batman Creature of the Night, and heard that it was like a spiritual successor to Superman's Secret Identity, I was like, well, I mean, Secret Identity works because everyone wants Superman's powers.
Yeah.
But like in actuality, even though Batman is a like, you know, an incredibly popular character and for good reason, I don't really want to be Batman because he doesn't have powers. He just has money and dead parents. And so this book tells the story of a boy whose name is Bruce Wainwright, mm-hmm. but insists that everyone drops the right mm-hmm. and calls him Bruce Wayne. And
well, he's leaves a really long space between the Wayne and the right.
Yep. And he has a an uncle who he refers to as like his name's like Albert
Alton.
Frederick or something like that. And so he calls his uncle Alfred. He too has like, you know, wealthy parents. And one night on Halloween night when he's dressed up as Batman, they return home to their house to find it's been broken into and Bruce Wainwright loses his parents.
This was a like really tough read. Like great, incredible, but like really upsetting, really sad.
Yeah, extremely sad. Prestige format.
Prestige format. Is that what this is called, Jim?
That's
where
what
it has a spine?
Book of Spine? You know the ones with spines, Jim? It's great. I think.
Yay.
But I agree with you. Yes, it was a very heavy read.
Yeah, like, because we're all so used to the Bruce Wayne story and, like, the stupid pearls, and we've all seen it a billion times, and we all get sick of it. But having it sort of represented with a different character refreshes how upsetting it is.
Yeah, it was. It's not really like what. Yeah, we know. We've already talked about that, Jim. Listen. Kurt Busiek's strength as a writer is more about like the very hopeful things that I love about superheroes. So seeing him take on a much darker story, I was like, oh, how's he going to handle this? And it's definitely handled with the same sensibilities and aplomb that he would kind of do towards something more fun and hopeful. Mm. It never gets like, you know, it's a sad book, definitely, but it's not dark.
I would disagree. I think it is dark. This is really dark. This is to do with a kid whose parents died who manifests like a literal scary bat monster.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. You're right. But I guess
it smashes the bat enclosure at the zoo.
It never completely left like the realm of like it never entered complete helplessness is what
no,
I meant.
No, yeah. And it's like it's sad and affecting more than it's like the Batman Who Laughs style grim dark bullshit.
Exactly. Give me this a million times over.
100%.
The most metal Batman of all time, dude.
He's got spikes.
Oh, dude, have you read
eyes.
Batman lately, dude? Batman's totally metal now, dude. It's fucking awesome. He like pulled the Joker's spine out and started playing it like a fucking guitar, man. It was tuned to D.
Probably the best thing about this whole thing is that Levins is doing a face that none of you can see. He's doing a classic metal stoner face.
Don't knock my whaling face, babe. I can't wait to review the next issue of DC Metal, Dark Knights of Metal. But yeah, Batman Creature of the Night. It's not necessarily an easy read.
No.
But it is a book that I will be ready for each issue with bated breath. And
yeah.
We didn't even mention how wonderful John Paul Leon's art is
so
on this.
So gorgeous. And he does all the colors and all the lettering himself. And it's beautiful.
And the lettering is fantastic because this book is like told from the point of view of Bruce Wainwright and his uncle Alfred as well. And they have very different kind of word balloons when they talk, mm-hmm. when they narrate, and both of them like they're on like even though as narrators they're able to reveal everything in their mind to the reader, they're not able to reveal any of that stuff to each other,
exactly.
And so that creates an even more sadness within this book.
And it's cool to see like a genuinely fresh take on the Batman sort of concept and mythos that's not trying to be super extreme or super whatever. Like, this is just really affecting.
Yeah, well, I love that this is like him kind of manifesting a Batman instead of just putting on a bat suit.
Yeah, totally.
And trying to be Batman. Like, absolutely. He almost doesn't want to be Batman. He just wants there to be a Batman in his world.
Yeah.
That would have prevented his parents' death.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad.
Highly recommended. And yeah, again, it is like a beautiful prestige format book.
Yep.
In the same realm as other recent DC releases, like that Deadman book and the Supergirl being super.
Yeah,
they've all been really good so far.
Yeah.
I highly recommend picking up this one too.
Agreed.
Just one last little I don't know, round of applause, which you can do yourself at home for John Paul Leon's art.
Beautiful.
Very good, really applause, gorgeous. Everybody. So also from DC this week, we got book one of a book that I feel like should have been prestige format too.
Totally.
Because it is this felt like three issues in one. Welcome to Mystic You, which is a book all about Zatanna and her days of, training to use the dark magics at a school akin to like...
A university.
Well, it's like a, you know, kind of...
College-y...
Harry Pottery kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's been written by Elisa Quitney and art by Mike Norton. Colors by Jordi Belair. That's a very good team. Even though I'm not familiar with Elisa, like those are that you, Mike Norton and Jordi Belair on doing your art duties. Like you're like, oh cool, this is going to be a good book no matter what the fuck
it's
I write.
Look great.
But for me, like reading this, and I definitely think that this would have been better as just a regular one issue instead of like doing this super extended. Like I think this would be a great first arc of a series, but instead you get it all at once, which is it's cool.
Yeah, they just they introduce so many characters in this, and there is an element of it's quite reliant. I don't know if this would appeal to someone who doesn't have a extended knowledge of DC magical stuff, because there's a lot of characters that show up.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to see if anyone read it who doesn't really know who, you know, Cain and Abel are from the Sandman universe.
Yeah, totally.
Etc. But I wanted to enjoy this more than I did, I think. I don't think it, like, ticked all of the buttons or something.
All
the buttons? Do you tick buttons?
The buttons. Anyway. The buttons.
Yeah. I wasn't totally blown away by this first issue, and it's so up my alley that I really thought
it's surprising.
Love it.
So Zatanna, shortly after accidentally sending her father to hell, is basically sent off to university, in which she studies with a young June Moon, aka the Enchantress, the son of Dr. Faust, and then a few other kind of magical learning. Characters who I'm not quite familiar if they were like allegories for other characters or related to other characters.
Not to the best of my knowledge.
At this school, Frankenstein is a teacher. I liked his little cameo, and I hope we get more of him in this series.
Mr. Eternity.
Yep.
Who I only know of Kid Eternity.
Right.
But that was based on an older character, right?
Mr. E. And then also, what are the two? There can be two people at one time. Dr. Occult and Dr. Something else? Have you heard of them? I've never heard of those. They're like one person who's two people that share the same body.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with them.
So they kind of take the headmaster position.
But also Madame Xanadu is a teacher.
So for me, like, this is kind of like what I wanted Gotham Academy to be. Even though that said, I didn't read enough of that to really give it a proper kind of judgment. But I guess like the idea of just a bunch of random kids who weren't characters that I already knew going to school.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, you know, I know Zatanna and I know a few of the other characters. I think that's what kind of drew me to it. I really enjoyed their interactions. I honestly think that the only weakness is that they just told too much of a story in one hit.
Yeah,
I think this, if you just introduced like three characters in and the headmaster and then like an ongoing mystery and made this a 20-page comic,
yeah,
it would have been so much more digestible. But I think in making this a big extra-sized issue, they've shot themselves in the foot a bit.
Yeah, and there were a couple of things in it which just didn't... I wanted it to be cleverer or something. Like, I think there are a couple of sort of tropes or ideas they're relying on. Like, I don't like the fact that... Like, so the whole June Moon Enchantress thing, when she becomes Enchantress, she, like, starts dressing like a goth and is like, yeah, let's have sex and stuff like that. And I'm tired of, like, the bad girl being like, yeah, millions of sex or whatever. It's just boring. That's boring to me. Do something smarter. Do something cleverer. That annoyed me. So those are the kinds of issues that I had with this. But I'm on board and I'll I'll keep reading a couple issues.
Yeah, I definitely think this is worth a few issues, especially if the magical side of the DC universe is something that is your cup of tea, and it absolutely is mine.
Yeah.
And I like that, like, there's a reference to Constantine, but he doesn't show up in this because he would have, like, ruined the vibe of these first three issues. He's definitely someone that, you know, would be put to good use later on in the series once everyone's a bit more established.
Absolutely.
And we should say that, like, this opens in present day with Zatanna kind of witnessing the, like, you know, almost death of her headmaster, ex-headmaster, I guess, and many other of the characters that we're introduced to in this series. And so I guess that we have to go back to see how it all happened, what all went wrong. But yeah, I'm definitely on board for this. I hope it becomes like a regular, like you know, comic as opposed to a book that has like 70 pages or whatever each issue.
Yeah, totally. I assume it will.
So they're just comics are just better to be digested like in that format, or at least that they're written in that format.
Yeah, for sure. If you want to do something that's more extended, just make it graphic novel format. There's no reason, like, this is alternate universe. You could just release this as a graphic novel, like the Earth One books.
Yeah, totally. So now we're going to go talk about a book called The New Talent Showcase 2017, number one, which is part of like a kind of writer and artist boot camp that DC offer. With Klaus Janson and Andy Kubert. The Andy Kubert? The Joe Kubert School? Is that what it is?
I don't think so. I think it's just something that DC put on. They started doing this a couple of years ago, and we've had people like, I think Marguerite Bennett came up through that, or she was a student of Scott Snyder's or something.
Yeah,
but it's a cool thing, I think. I think it's a cool thing that they do. Instead of the worst cover. Such a bad cover.
The cover is just like a kind of blank color. Like
exploding into space with a bunch of random people. No thought
put into the cover whatsoever, which is a shame. But aside from that, in terms of art, the art is the only reason I would recommend picking this book up. There is some incredible art within this
book. Especially the Katana story.
Yeah, that was my favorite too. The Katana story and then the Dr. Fate story has excellent art too.
Yep.
So I'm definitely there's some names that I'm going to like kind of be on the lookout for in terms of artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unfair to even say so, but like you can't really tell that good of a story in such a short amount of pages with these, like, you know, you have a Katana story, you have a Dr. Fate story, you have a Wonder Woman story, you have a Suicide Squad story, you have a Duke Thomas story.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's a pretty cool idea, I guess, and nothing's really executed that well. So it's not a really good showcase of writers. But in terms of artists, Lin Yoshi, who does the art on the Katana story, is a name I'm going to be looking out for.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll try and figure out the name of the Doctor. Oh my God, just looking at the Dr. Fate art. So fucking good.
So cool.
I don't know, couldn't even compare who it like. It looks like proper throwback, like, you know, John Romita Sr. or Kirby even.
It's by Sam Lofty.
Lotfy. And great colors by John Rausch on that too. I actually tapped out because the stories were just kind of doing nothing for me, and just looked at the art the entire way through. Did you make it through to the Scott Snyder story?
Yeah, I did. It was mad boring.
It was Scott Snyder finally writing a Wonder Woman story. And
who wanted that? Not me.
No.
So, no offense, Scott Snyder.
Did Klaus Janson do the art on it? No.
No, I don't know. I don't know who did the art on it.
But yeah, look, these are always a kind of like a raffle, a lucky dip.
Yeah.
Is that a better way to describe it? You never know what you're going to get. But I should say, though, and kudos to DC for doing it this way. I think all three of those books that we just mentioned... not the showcase had them, but Mystic U and Batman Creature of the Night, neither of them had advertising in it,
which is a
really, really cool little treat.
It sure is.
And certainly something that Marvel would never, ever do. So we got a couple of annuals from DC this week as well. Super Sons, number one, written by regular writer Peter Tomasi, with art in this one by Paul Pelletier, looking the least like what the Super Sons have ever looked like since their series started. Of course, Super Sons being the team up between John Kent, Superboy, and Damian Wayne, Robin. Inks on this one by Cam Smith, colors by Hi-Fi. And this, I say, you know, that this is the least what they've looked like. Fuck, what am I trying to say, Siobhan? Finish my sentence.
It's visually, it's pretty far removed from the classic Super Sons style. Brilliant. However, this barely involves the Super Sons.
Exactly. That's where I was going.
This is all about What are they called in this universe? The super pets.
The pet Avengers.
Yeah, that's literally what I was about to say. And I was like, that is incorrect.
But this was really, really silly and fun. Basically, after Superboy goes to bed after stopping a crime spree in New York, we see Crypto fly off to Wayne Manor and talk to the Bat-Cow, who then moos loudly and gets the attention of Ace the Bat-Hound.
That's actually Titus.
Titus.
Damien's dog.
That's
so it's
right.
Ace the Bat-Hound and Titus. This just involves Titus.
Oh, right. So Ace just stays sleeping.
Yeah.
Poor Ace.
Ace is old.
Right. Titus and Crypto fly off to get the help of Detective Chimp.
So already making this my favorite comic of the week.
And then he helps them assemble the super pets, which involve, Supergirl's cat?
Yeah, Streaky.
Streaky the Supercat.
Bat Cow. Clay Critter.
Never heard of Clay Critter before.
Me neither.
And I also haven't heard of
Flexi the Plastic Bird.
So Plastic Man's Bird. So this is a DC universe in which Plastic Man is trapped in an egg.
Yeah.
But there's Plastic Bird.
Yeah. Who appears to be like a cockatoo.
Yeah. Pretty great. then they basically earlier in the book, Superboy before going to bed's like, yeah, tomorrow is the day that I find out what's going on with all these missing pets.
Yeah.
And then while he sleeps, all of the super pets basically save the day and save all the pets.
It was cute.
It was really, really cute. I think it's always risky trying to write a story where the pets talk in bruf, grr, hut, weird onomatopoeic noises. But I thought the team did quite a good job of telling this fun, a very simple kind of, solving a mystery story from
Absolutely.
The point of view of pets.
It's no Beasts of Burden, but it's up there.
Yeah, I need to read that, don't I?
Yeah,
it's really I've read one issue of it. It's pretty good.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love Joel Thompson.
Reminds me, he wrote the first book we talked about in the episode, but Kurt Busiek wrote a really great issue of Superman, which dealt with Crypto trying to find Superboy after
Cute.
He went missing. It was really, really, really good.
That's so good. Oh, I think I even remember that.
Yeah, it was a really good issue.
Just Super Sons is such a great all-ages comic. If you are struggling to find something for your kid in the mainstream DC universe, I highly recommend Super Sons.
Yeah, definitely. And we've complained about the regular series for starting off so well and then suddenly being it's about alternate dimensions and it's about way too complicated things to explain in an all-ages comic and I just kind of get lost in it. But then this issue, just having Damien and John solve a crime of of a bank robbery.
Perfect.
That's what I want. That's all I want. And then them just being rude to each other.
Yeah.
That's what the book should be.
Perfect.
Plus you got animals. Great.
Done.
Great stuff.
Well, Bat-Cow.
We got another annual this week, which is Aquaman. And
dreams may come.
I was like, oh, cool. I love the current Aquaman run. Then I saw that neither the writer nor the artist was involved on the creative team. This is written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who I think is a novelist, right?
No idea.
Art by Max Fiamara. Both very different to the current ongoing team of Dan Abnett Sejic.
Nice. I really like Max Fiamara, though. I'd be really keen to see him on anything else.
I loved this issue.
Yeah, this was a great issue. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, so this is almost a take on For the Man Who Has Everything, the Superman story that Alan Moore wrote, in which... Batman and Robin go to the Fortress of Solitude to give Superman a birthday present. And someone has already given him a birthday present. It was a weird demonic plant that trapped onto Superman and trapped him in a world in the world that he wishes he was in, in which Krypton was never destroyed. And so this is set in the future, and we're introduced to Superman and Wonder Woman and Hal Jordan, who were all much older.
Hal Jordan is way cooler.
Yeah, old man, old gray man with a beard, but he still wears his flight jacket and he has a permanently green lantern arm.
Yeah.
Just a big green arm.
Lost his arm somehow. Aquaman and Mira have been allowed to grow old.
That's right.
And Atlantis is this thriving community and they've built this amazing city, which is half... above the water, half below the water.
And they have a son.
They have a son.
And
12.
So, shortly after being visited by Superman and Wonder Woman and Hal, they are attacked from below. While while attempting to subdue the attackers, it becomes clear to Aquaman that the attackers are actually trying to help. And we learn the true story of what this future society that he's a part of is actually all about. And I think as an annual, this is the best kind of annual. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think For the Man Who Has Everything was an annual.
Maybe
I'm wrong. There was definitely, Alan Moore definitely wrote a really good Superman annual story with Swamp Thing in it.
Mm.
Maybe For the Man Who Has to have whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, this is fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a really solid, emotional, standalone book. Like, it is what an annual should be in that it is just its own story. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to be reading the current Aquaman stuff to know what's happening in it. It's really just a self-contained little issue. And I think they did a really incredible job, and I'd love to see more from both of these creators. That is what an annual should do, everyone.
Oh, so Philip Kennedy Johnson has... We've reviewed a few comics of his in the past. He wrote that Boom book called Warlords of Appalachia.
Appalachia?
Appalachia, yes.
I don't remember that.
I love pronouncing things in this show every single week. Another one called Last Sons of America.
Okay.
And he did that Kong Gods of Skull Island book as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so yeah.
Oh, there you go.
That's cool if he's going to be a DC writer. On and off now, I'd welcome it, especially if anything is as good as this Aquaman issue.
Absolutely.
Which felt in line with the current story that the series is telling now. I don't know if that you know was purposeful or this was just like a great enough issue that he could have put it out whenever and it would have felt like a good something to go alongside the main series.
Mm.
Yeah, complimentary.
Good.
So we got a few other number ones to get through this week that don't have the words DC on the front cover. And I'm going to kick off with a review of Sword of Ages, the new book published by IDW, written and drawn by Gabriel Rodriguez, best known for being the artist on the Lock and Key series, mm-hmm. And also one of my personal favorites from recent years. He did Little Nemo Return to Slumberland, which is highly recommended if you've not checked that out. But this has colors by Laverne Kinzierski, and is a book about a girl who has been trained to be a warrior after being like delivered by her family to a pack of like magical wolves.
They're like
magical cat like lions, tigers, yeah,
something,
not wolves.
I had to read this pretty quickly.
Yep.
So I feel like this is something, this was a dense first issue that I felt like I didn't really understand what was going on in this.
Yeah, so I finished it, then I went back and reread the first half of it again, which if you didn't have time to, I can see why you'd be confused. Yeah, so it's a very, very dense first half. And then once it gets going, it's great.
And there's a lot of narrators.
That's, exactly. It's quite confusing. And a lot of, some of the narrators don't actually like play a big role in this first issue at all. They just have like two pages here or there and you don't really, you know, I don't, the book ends with me unsure as to how they like factor into the main story.
Yeah.
What
a beautiful book though.
I mean, that's why I'm picking this up.
Absolutely.
He's such an incredible artist and seeing him do like a high fantasy book.
Yeah.
Like a sci-fi fantasy book at that, like is extremely compelling.
It's incredibly inventive. Like it's very aesthetically different from any other sort of sci-fi fantasy book that I've read recently. I think it looks gorgeous. The colors are really nice. It looks almost like a Dark Horse book in terms of the colors.
Definitely. But yeah, I definitely will give you like the first half of this book, first third even, is so exposition heavy. And it's just baffling because it's written by an artist who knows how to like tell a story with his art, with his art. Like there's, you know, there's the double page spread of our hero just like kicking ass.
Yeah.
And taking names as she like beats down. You can see her kind of like flipping into the scene, and every time she appears on these two pages, she's taking out another soldier. Mm-hmm. It's just great. It's so much fun.
It's such a gorgeous book.
So I definitely think like, you know, this is his first book as a writer,
mm-hmm.
to my knowledge anyway. And I think hopefully he finds his feet a bit more now that this, you know, exposition is kind of out of the way. And he's done a lot of world building in this book, I guess, you know, with those multiple narrations. Whether or not you actually took in everything that happened in this issue is another thing.
I did not.
But I definitely will be giving this multiple issues because, I mean, he is one of my favorite artists working today. And it's baffling that he's like, I don't know if he is exclusive to IDW or he just chooses to only publish through them. Because if I was a publisher, I'd be like just throwing money at him.
Yeah, totally.
Not even like to get him to write anything. I just throw
just
money.
Just throw money at him.
Like, yeah, give me hey Dan DiDio, another 1,000 thanks for the like Gabriel Rodriguez throwing at fund.
Why is Dan DiDio giving you money?
Because I work for DC. He's in charge of DC's money, right?
Yep, that's how it works.
Yeah, it is. Maybe I'm just asking him for money, just as a regular guy, and he's like, all right. This sounds like a worthy cause. So also through IDW this week, I read a Powerpuff Girls comic. Did you read this?
No, I did not.
I won't talk about it much. It's called Powerpuff Girls, The Bureau of Bad. And I like the Powerpuff Girls cartoon. I have not really watched much of the reboot.
Oh, me neither.
Which was not very well received, I don't think. I always kind of like, you know, we'll check in on these Cartoon Network books because I like the properties that they're based off of. Mm-hmm. But something happened recently. We got a really good Rugrats book through Boom.
Yes.
And one of our favorite things about that was that the art did not look like stills from the show.
Yeah.
It wasn't this like super, like, you know, traced almost from stills that we've already seen of the characters in the show. That was like the artist took liberties with how these characters should look. So it looks like a very vibrant and alive book while still looking like the Rugrats. This, unfortunately, is like, yeah, kind of, I guess, what all these Cartoon Network books do. It just looks like an episode of Powerpuff Girls.
Right.
Which, you know, I guess should be what it does in a way.
Hmm.
But
it's not bringing anything.
There's no vibrancy or emotion to the way the characters move around.
And I also think in cases like this, like, what's the point of this comic? Like, the Rugrats comic is great because it is reinvigorating something that's no longer on TV and it's, like, adding something.
Yes.
This is just, like, doing a shitty reproduction of an episode.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. It doesn't really feel like anything new. So that's my review.
Nice.
Yeah, I won't be reading any more of this. And I just want to say that, like, Rugrats is that good.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a hilarious thing to say. But, and we're getting really the same publisher, Boom, is putting out a Rocko's Modern Life comic this week.
I'm excited to read that too.
Especially if, like, if this is, like, the way they're looking at it now. Like, because Boom also did the Great Adventure Time comics,
mm-hmm.
which never look like in it. Like, you know, the artists take great liberties with what those characters look like. And you get quite stylized variations, you know, from arc to arc. I think that's way more preferable to having it look just like it did on a television show.
I agree.
Chasing Hitler. It's the edgy sequel to Kevin Smith's Chasing Amy. it's a comic book came out this week called through Red 5 Comics. And it is written by Haley and Jai Nitz with art by Jethro Morales and colors by Marie Enger.
And this is they've very easily, like, sorry.
Do you need me to finish your sentence?
They've done a great job by just putting the basic conceit in the first page, which just says, what if Hitler escaped Nazi Germany at the end of World War II? So if you like speculative history fiction, this could be the comic for you guys.
But then after, like, setting up what's going to happen on that first page, we then read an entire comic of that happening.
Yeah.
Like, so Hitler doesn't escape until the very end of the comic after he's married Eva von Braun. All the while...
Did she have a von in her name?
Was it just Eva Braun? There's a Tom Lehrer song. And he wrote it's Eva von Braun. I don't know. That's how I know all my historic references through pop culture, so I'm never to be trusted.
but they set up a couple of really uninteresting sort of, I guess it's supposed to be like a British soldier and an American soldier, but they're not that interesting.
Yep. Her name, middle names are Anna and Paula. So thanks for nothing, Tom Lehrer.
Fucking hell, Tom Lehrer. yeah, this was pretty boring. And a surprisingly sympathetic version of Hitler.
Yeah.
Which, like, I'm genuinely not opposed to. I think that we can have more interesting...
takes on real-life villains, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I think, yeah, I mean, a lot of people kind of get away with doing the most depraved stuff ever if they're like, oh, but it's just to Nazis.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, I think that's, like, it's not always a very, like, you know, good excuse to just kill a bunch of people horrifically.
Yeah, totally.
I think if you do, like, I mean, don't humanize a monster by all means, but I think, you know, exploring and making them a bit more interesting for the aid of a story, not history itself, I think is always interesting.
Agreed.
I'll be giving this another issue because, like, even though this first issue was not particularly interesting, I think now that from the second issue onwards, it's going to be them actually chasing Hitler.
And it's only a 4-issue miniseries.
Yeah, Red 5 are good like that. Which you would know because I don't think you've ever read a Red 5 comic.
No, doubt it.
So, yeah, it's Chasing Hitler. I'll be reading issue number 2 and I'll try and force Siobhan to if it's good.
We'll see.
This week, we got a new Vault comic called Reactor. And this is another comic written by Donny Cates, who is currently getting praise for his work over at Marvel. He's got it. He's just finished. He's had three Image books this year, including that weird, like, oversized one-shot that neither of us read about, like, it looks like kind of like a metal book about a guitar or something.
Oh, yeah.
In space. Space Guitar, the book. Finally. This is a book called Reactor. It's got art by Dylan Burnett and colors by Dee Kniff. This is a story about a bunch of, like, assassins or whatever leading an army against vampires. Yeah. Are they assassins?
I don't know. They're like mech guys. They have big mech suits and they're fighting a sort of endless war the vampires.
Technologically advanced mercenaries who have been trapped on a planet filled with vampires.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, on a neighboring planet, there are people with lots of money who don't see the value in keeping the entire planet and any of its inhabitants anymore. So not only are they up against vampires, but they're also up against the imminent doom from rich people with spaceships.
Yeah. I liked this. This was a fun issue.
I especially liked the reveal of the president.
Yeah, who's 12 and a total dick, but great at golf.
Yeah, I love that. That was so good. Yeah, any president that whose first line is "Nah, fuck Earth," is great. All right, so that's the planet. Fuck, it's Earth.
Yeah.
It's not just a vampire planet. It's Earth. No. That's like the first word on this comic is Earth. I miss that.
And it's like it's very silly. Like this is very like the humor's quite broad, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make me giggle.
It's almost like his take on very 90s. Like what was the Skrull Kill Crew? Mark Miller and Grant Morrison did together. It kind of like feels like a take on that, like this really badass, vampire killer squad.
Yeah.
It's humorous enough for me to keep reading.
Yeah, absolutely, I'm on board.
I just love how varied every Vault book is. I don't think there's any two that have been similar in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, similar in tone or anything like that. This was good fun. I liked it. It was way funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is always a treat.
So the final number one that I read this week, if you've got another one after this, mm-hmm. John Wick, is the Keanu Reeves character, the star of the films John Wick and John Wick 2. He finally got his own comic book series.
Finally. He's such a comic book character.
A five-year-old character. I haven't seen either of movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen two yet, but I loved the first one. And I love Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I love Keanu Reeves. I'd read a book just called Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
And it's just about him being like nice to people.
Yes.
Because apparently he is.
I would read that also.
Yeah. But this book is written by Greg.
My personal fan fiction about
Greg Pak, with art by Giovanni Valletta, colors by David Curiel and Inlight Studios. I think the art is the worst thing about this book. There are moments of like kind of good panels, but there's almost no background art at all. Just like people in front of like beige.
Grayscale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get much out of this as a person who's not watched the movies?
I knew what they were trying to do.
I
thought the writing was like interesting enough. I'm not really compelled to read any more of it. As I was thinking, I was like, man, I bet if I watched this, this would mean something to me.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. It's not like the most mind-blowing comic of all time, and it's not better than the movies
by any
means. I probably won't read any more of this. I was about to be like, oh, I'll keep reading this, but like, I think I just got, there's a great Giovanni Timpano cover.
Yep. Yeah, it's an excellent
with
cover.
A very good likeness of Keanu on it, and I think that tricked me.
Great,
and Greg Pak does a great job. But
great Cowan and Sienkiewicz cover.
Oh
as well.
Hell yeah!
But yeah, I feel like Dynamite need to stop splurging out on variant covers and just put a bit more effort into the production of the art within their books.
Yeah,
because I feel like it's always like the first thing I'll say about one of their books is, oh, the art could be better.
Yeah, totally.
And it's never the fault of the actual. I feel like it's always like, you know, you have 2 weeks to draw the new John Wick comic.
Yeah,
and
you've
got to do it with your left hand because you have to write another comic for us with your right.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of the series, you'll probably be a fan of this comic too. What's the final number one for us this week?
Okay, I read Quarry's War by Max Allan Collins and Simon Kudransky. Colors by Guy Major. And this is a book about a guy whose name is Quarry, and it's telling two stories, one from his past and one from his present. This is published by Hard Case Crime.
Through
the
Titan
imprint.
Yeah.
And it's like, so one story is set now when he's like an assassin, and then another story is set years in the past when he was a sniper during the Vietnam War. And it tells it literally page by page. So one page is the past, one page is the present, one page is the past. And I found that very irritating. I would much rather have had it like half and half, or if the two stories were relevant to each other in any way, mm-hmm. maybe it could have worked. But it's just telling two totally disparate stories with a character who doesn't seem to have much of a personality, so it's hard to even see that they're similar.
Right.
With pretty average art. And we're getting so many Nam comics at the moment. I don't know what's going on, but that's now the new thing.
Too
many, as far as I'm concerned. This didn't really do that much for me, so I'm probably not going to read more.
And I might be wrong, but is this the first that we've come across, at least, Hard Case Crime book that hasn't been written by a woman?
Well, maybe.
I feel like all the Hard Case Crime books have been
quite
feminist-driven.
Like,
yeah,
possibly. I'm not 100% sure.
That's what made them cool and kind of gave them the edge, because it was telling like familiar tropes but with a different eye.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't tell if this is like based on another property or something, maybe, because
also I do run the risk of Max being a fairly androgynous name sometimes, so I could be wrong.
Oh yeah, true. Max Allen Collins, who is apparently a New York Times best-selling author.
Right.
Best-selling author of Road to Perdition.
His work. Also, there's a picture of him. Definitely not a lady.
Definitely not a lady.
Oh, right. Yeah, he did Road to Perdition. And he did Mommy 2, Mommy's Day. Let's watch that.
Sounds good.
Maybe a commentary of that?
Absolutely.
So those are all of our number one issues this week. If you would like to discuss any of the ones that you read or wish that we did read instead, easiest place to find us is on our Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast.
Nice.
I forgot what the last word there. Fuck. So Siobhan, you're looking real fresh today. Any reason why?
Because I shaved.
Thank you so much. And what kind of razor did you shave with today?
A very good one.
That's right. One that you got from dollarshaveclub.com. It's the answer to finally making your life so much easier. Since Siobhan joined Dollar Shave Club, she doesn't need to choose between price and quality to get an amazing shave anymore. DollarShaveClub.com is a no-brainer for an incredible shave delivered right to Siobhan's door. They deliver high-quality razors right to Siobhan's home for less than what she used to pay, which was...
heaps! Razors are so expensive, guys, and I have a very bristly chin.
Now there's no reason for her to deal with the hassle of going to the store to pick up expensive razors, thanks to the
You've
club.
You've done a really good job of personalizing this copy.
I'm going to send it to him. I'm like, aren't we good at this? Siobhan gets a first-class shave with her executive razor, and when she uses it with their Dr. Kalkava's shave brother, the blade just gently glides for the smoothest shave imaginable. Here's your chance to see why over 3 million Siobhans, like Siobhan, love Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get your first month of the club for as little as $5. After that, it's just a few bucks a month. Dollar Shave Club is so confident in the quality and value of all their products that there's no long-term commitment or any hidden fees. There's no reason not to join. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/serious issues. That's dollarshaveclub.com/serious issues.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, in actuality, like, there is nothing better than not having to worry about things that you need all the time.
Totally.
So getting them sent to your fucking house, that's the way to do it.
Absolutely. Do they have a patronizing, like, lady...
Lady shave?
Subscription option where everything's pink and costs three times as much for no reason.
This seems pretty unisex.
Nice.
But yeah, if you want, maybe you can get like a bedazzler
on
the side.
Yes.
Would you? Yeah.
I'm going to bejewel Dollar Shave Club.
I was getting mixed up with vejazzler. again.
Then vejazzle.
Thank you so much,
Don't
Dollar Shave Club.
Around.
No, God. That would be painful. Dollarshave.club.com/serious issues. Thank you so much to dollarshaveclub.com for supporting the podcast. Siobhan, now it's time to play a very, very fun game. And that is roll the dice for Image, Marvel, or DC. And 1 to 2 is Image, 3 to 4 is Marvel, and 5 to 6 is DC. And the first one is 2, so it's Image first. And then 5, so the one DC book that we have second.
Nice.
And then we're going to end on Marvel and other publishers. So let's talk about some Image books now. They probably put out the most books this week that I read.
Same. And, it's a great week too.
Yeah, enormous. Which one should we talk about first?
Let's talk about Maestros.
Yeah, okay, sure. Because we've got some books that actually ended. Some series issues favorites that ended as well. We can talk about them in a minute. Maestros had its second issue. This is written by Steve Scrooge with Dave Stewart and Phonographics. Mm-hmm. And I should say, I think this actually came out a few weeks ago, but it only...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Just shipped to Kings because Bloody Diamond.
Bloody Diamond.
And they are also the responsible for the fact that we did not will not be able to review Black Magic this week. Didn't ship this week, unfortunately. But hopefully very soon. Maestros is the story about an exiled magician who's been laying low on Earth, who finds his entire family, bar his mother, has been destroyed, and thus it is up to him to become the magic king or something.
Yep. King of all magic.
King of all magic.
Leader of this world.
And so we kind of learned all that in the first issue, and this second issue just sees what he is doing as king.
Yeah.
It's been written and drawn by Steve Scrooge, who is just a phenomenal artist on par with like a Jeff Darrow or a just, you know, one of those artists that you could tell labors over every panel forever because everything is so detailed.
Absolutely. And,
you know, he can't just draw someone in the background without like intricately detailing every tiny centimeter of their costume.
Absolutely. And it looks gorgeous.
It looks great. There is still a little bit too much exposition in each issue, but the story is absolutely coming through, and I'm really enjoying both the story and how despicable some of the characters in this world are. In particular, the main character, he's like, you know, he has such good intentions, but he's still quite depraved in a way. And kind of useless as well.
Absolutely. He's a sort of... but he's this really well-meaning sort of hapless idiot. And he's gone and done all this like social study. So he knows exactly what he should do should he ever become the maestro. And it's all kind of very left-leaning ideology-wise.
That's right.
It's good fun. This kind of reminds me of like... Because it's sort of... satirical of the genre in a kind of Terry Pratchett-y way.
Sure.
But it's like a really filthy Terry Pratchett.
Yeah, it reminds me of like one of Steve Scrooge's recent collaborators, Brian K. Vaughan.
Absolutely.
From a writing point of view, quite a lot. Look, hopefully with any luck, he'll get as good as Brian K. Vaughan is at balancing, you know, world building and you know, just moving the story along.
Yeah. But I like this a lot.
Yeah, me too. This is just a joy to read.
And so I like how flawed this character is. Like, he's funny and charming and well-meaning, but still just kind of a dick.
Yeah, totally.
And I like that.
Exactly. Who lets his guard down in a bad way towards the end of this issue, and who knows what's going to happen in the next one. But from the look of the cover, nothing good.
Nothing good is going to happen.
He's being licked in the face by the guy who killed his father and everyone near and dear to his father.
And man, the cover's so good.
The cover's incredible. How is he, like, surely this is going to be a 6 issues, then a hiatus series. I know Image don't like to reveal that at first, but, like, there's no way Scrooge could keep this up as a monthly.
Maybe he's, like, got a whole bunch of issues in the can.
Yeah, I guess he was kind of semi-quiet over the last few years besides the Brian K. Vaughan book.
Mm.
So that's Maestro's issue number 2. Let's talk about Spy Seal.
Let's talk about Spy Seal.
Spy Seal is the Rich Tomaso book, which is...
homage to Tintin.
Homage to Tintin, told through like anthropomorphic animals,
mm-hmm.
The lead of which is a seal who is a spy, hence the name, Spy Seal.
It's an easy sell, guys.
I also like that if you're only hearing us talking about it, it sounds like we're saying Spice Eel.
Nice.
Like it's a really hot eel.
It's like the third Spice Girl.
Yeah, perfect.
By third, I mean
Spice
six.
Eel.
I can't remember how many Spice Girls there were. How many Spice Girls were there?
Five, yeah.
I like that I looked at Wayne for that and he was like five.
Five, yeah. One for every Olympic ring.
This is such a beautiful book and I love the subtle visual nods to Tintin as well. Like there's... just the way the landscapes look, the fact that someone shows up in a kilt in this, I felt like was a little bit referential.
Well, someone. It ain't just someone.
Someone. It's Spice Eel, but he's dressed as an old dog. Great.
So great. And I loved that, like, the first three pages are written in extremely, like, Scottish dialect.
It's dialect, really hard to read.
It's brilliant.
The only things that this was missing... for me, as a Tintin homage, is someone, like, you know how Tintin always uses his fingers and pretends to be a gun? Is like, put him up and sticks him in someone's back?
Yep.
They needed that. Also, someone needed to be chloroformed. Other than that, perfect.
Yeah, totally. Yep, true.
Totally perfect.
Also, if he had, another smaller animal, or if he had, like, a little person.
Yeah.
It was his Snowy. Like.
That's great. Such a fun book. I think this will be... more fun also to read in trade format.
It's funny you should mention that, Siobhan, because that not only is a trade coming of this, which this first run has been called The Court and Steel Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
And volume number 1 of The Court and Steel Phoenix comes out in January next year, so very, very soon, and it is going to be an oversized...
Oh my God, sick!
Like the old Tintin trades
That's
were.
Great.
That'll be
worthwhile getting, just to be able to see this art blown up to that size.
Definitely, like, yeah, I'm 100% adding that to my order. Like, that's so exciting, and I feel like if you've heard us rave about the book, and you've kind of wanted to, if you've been keen enough to give it a shot, like, holy shit, like,
absolutely,
definitely getting it for my friend Angus Truscott, my co-host mm-hmm. on
Tintin fan.
His birthday in January too.
Oh, perfect.
So yeah, as a Tintin fan, this is 100% what he's going to get. And he doesn't listen to this podcast, so no one fucking tell him.
No one tell him, guys.
I'll know it was you.
What was I going to say? I can't remember.
You're going to say, Spice Eel is great.
Spice Eel is so great. It's so great, guys. It does also just make me want to go back and read Tintin, though.
Yeah, which is great.
Which is great.
Yeah, and I, not only do I have a whole bunch of Tintin to read, but I also have like a whole bunch of Tintin, European Tintin copycats that I bought in a recent humanoid sale on... Yep. On Comixology, and like some of them look so much fun. So I'll be talking about that in a future Patreon episode for sure.
Cool. Also, did you guys know, I read this recently in a book about Hergé, but he was one of the first people to use word balloons.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
What was before, it was just like a little dash and then
no,
the text?
No, just like underneath.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Very cool. Hergé. Cool Hergé. What a fucking...
Not all bad is what I have to say about him. another series ended this week, and it was season 2 of Renato Jones Freelancer. Did you stick with this?
I sure did.
Created, written, drawn, colored, and owned by Kyle Andrews. This was a very kind of like mirroring current politics, mm-hmm. but in a very fun and extreme way.
Absolutely.
In which Renato Jones plays a man raised to be a businessman, but by night. He puts on a mask and shoots crime in the face.
Yeah.
As a vigilante.
Says, choke on this, and then shoots people in the face.
The second season saw his very rich neighbor become the president of America.
Mm-hmm.
And his kind of reign started out like he was like a pawn.
Mm-hmm.
But then his like true motives are revealed in the last few arcs, and let's just say that this issue begins with a whole bunch of nuclear weapons headed towards America, and him basically offering the codes to disarm the nuclear arms headed towards the families of the richest people in the world in exchange for money.
Mm.
So not the greatest president.
No, but not the worst.
This issue kind of wraps everything up in a kind of almost too neat way, because we find a lot of characters in this have a much closer connection to Renato Jones and have been there since the very start of his origin story. But I think it ended in a kind of nice enough way that I'd definitely read another series of this.
Yeah, totally. I hope that we get to see more of this character, because it's really fun. It's a really fun series. Although it's kind of a, like, he's anti the 1%. That's his key thing. That's his key character trait. But he himself is this, like, ultra wealthy dude. I would like Renato Jones, not Renato Jones, fucking hell. I would like Kyle Andrews to address that at some point in a future series.
I mean, he kind of has. Like, he only has the wealth because he needs to be seen as the businessman by day, right?
Yeah, but then the series ends and he's still super well. Anyway, whatever. I'm on board with this. And it's just such a gorgeous looking book. Like, even if I had no idea what was going on in it, I still love it.
Yeah,
me too. Looks so cool.
Really, really cool. And also, it wasn't revealed that he had, toxic sperm at the end of this.
What was that in?
Have you read the Kyle Andrews Spider-Man book?
No.
In which,
toxic sperm?
Mary Jane dies because Peter Parker has developed radioactive sperm.
Okay, I have to find that and read that. That sounds incredible.
That would be really funny if he was cursed to end every book with that reveal. Like, oh, man, I'm writing such a good one this time. I guess I got to write the radioactive sperm in. So let's talk about Kill or Be Killed.
Yes, please.
Now, I just want to, I always do it to myself. I always, like, look at all my books that I've got for the week. I see Kill or Be Killed's in there. I'm like, no, don't read that straight away, because that will ruin the rest of the books you have to read this week.
Yeah.
Never listen.
No.
Read it first.
Yeah.
Every other book sucked in comparison.
Yeah. So good. It's just, I don't know what else I can say to convince people to read this. It's so good. It's so good, guys.
I would be very surprised if this book didn't win our best book of the year. When I think about it, like that, look, if I take nuance out of the equation, if I just boil it down to what book has, like, completely, like, you know, when it started last year, I didn't love it straight away, but this has won me over and then some.
Absolutely.
It's one of my favorite artists, with one of my favorite writers, with one of my new favorite colorists.
Yep.
Just, like, expertly telling a story that I've never read before.
Absolutely.
And I think for that, like, reason alone, it's just like, I just can't let anything else get near that top position.
Yeah. Brubaker has done, like it's so crazy to see him developing so much as a writer when he was already so great.
Yep, 100%.
And, like, to just be continuing to become more and more expert and find new and interesting ways of telling stories. And fucking hell, Sean Phillips is, like,
yeah,
just like, the characters are so disparate and interesting, and the facial expressions are so minute in their, like, specificity. Like, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful to look at.
And I don't know if it's, like, his pairing with Breitweiser on colors, but, like, this, you know, he's a big fan of shadowing out part of the face.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know what she brings to it that wasn't there before, but it just looks so much better than it used to.
Absolutely.
And I think, like,
and the scary demon is so scary and so good. And, like, the ongoing, is he crazy or is there really a demon, is so compelling.
Yeah, and, you know, this issue opens with a scene that we've seen, like, four times in the series so far, and they're still doing new things with that scene.
Yeah.
It's really, really great. And also, like, I think Brubaker is one of the few writers, like, you know, we love comic books and we do read tons, but there's nothing more of a turn off than when you turn a page and it's just a bunch of prose sometimes.
Yeah.
And, like, it makes you feel like an idiot. He's like, oh, where are the pictures? Why it's all words?
I hate reading.
But I think Brubaker is just, like, finally unlocked. Like, I'm fine when he does it. Like, in fact, I love getting any extra words from Brubaker.
Agreed. And the back matter is always so interesting.
Yep.
So good. And such a, like, because they don't collect those in the trade. So it's really a worthwhile thing to pick up in singles. Like, if you have an interest in sort of classic cinema or film noir, there are such interesting essays in the back by Kim Morgan every issue.
It's a different writer each issue.
I really thought it was always Kim Morgan. Am I stupid? I'm stupid.
This one's all about the hitchhiker. And also, just even his letter in his column, The Secret Ingredient, Brubaker's letter is really, really funny and even just informative. He just tells you a bunch of television and books that he's been reading. He takes a dig at them, the DC doing revisiting the Watchmen characters again, which is
very funny.
He didn't like the new Blade Runner movie, which is interesting. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I need to rewatch the original.
That's a long, long movie to sit through in a crying room at a cinema.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
I'm not going to do that.
So yeah, Kill or Be Killed, issue number 14. You could have probably guessed our review before even talking about it.
Buy it.
Buy it, for sure. Motor Crush this week returned. Issue number 8, written by created by the team of Brendan Fletcher, Cameron Stewart, and Babs Tarr. And it's about setting the future society in which there's a woman who is maybe part alien, who's been raised by someone that she was found by, and she races cars and is addicted to some weird drug that's also alien.
Yep.
The drug,
she needs it to survive, but it also makes your motorbike go real fast.
That's right. So the last issue 7, which is like the return after a short hiatus, I just thought was so great. And I was like, why did I almost drop this book? And then I remember that the big alien threat is just a big hovering, like, diamond. Like a big pink hovering diamond with no... It shows up. I'll find it for you.
It's a very pink book.
Yeah, the pink's great, but I just, like, I don't know why it annoys me so much. But, like, everyone's so well detailed and drawn and everything's so well fleshed out. And then
that's the alien threat.
The alien threat is that shape. It's like akin to like that weird pea green soup mist that was killing all the X-Men last year. Just a weird threat. And I don't know why something so insignificant and irks me to the point that I don't want to read the book anymore, because there's so much in this book that I do like, but I don't understand the decision to make the enemy a shape.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it'll develop into something.
What do shapes develop into? Maybe we'll just slap some eyes on there. Maybe that's what I should do. Before I read each issue, I'll just get some googly eyes and a glue stick.
It's a great call.
And just smash some eyes on all the shapes. Give the characters that already have eyes a few extra ones. I love eyes. But no, this is a good series.
It really is.
It's just that one thing gives me the shits.
Doesn't seem like a fair critique.
We got the second issue of The Family Trade.
See, I didn't get to this.
Written by Justin Jordan with art by Nikki Ryan. Written by Justin Jordan and Nikki Ryan with art by Morgan Beam and letters by Rachel Deering. Man, I love the art. Morgan Beam's art on this book is so unique and cool. Like, it's just like this very kind of throwback children's book style watercolor artwork, which is the main reason I'm reading this. The story itself, this one was kind of not as fun as the first issue, but very much kind of like introducing characters that I know we'll see more of. Even though I don't really care what the story is so far, I just am enjoying it for the art.
It's a gorgeous book.
Yeah, and I know a good story will develop because Justin Jordan is a good writer. And I'm sure Nikki Ryan is good too.
Great.
Did you read any more Image books?
Yeah, I also read issue 5 of Sacred Creatures by, it's just the most enormous creative team, written by Pablo Raimondi and Klaus Janssen, letters by Clem Robbins, also colors by Dean White, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's really good. This is like an insanely complicated book to explain, and it is such a huge, like every issue feels like this gigantic oversized issue. There's just so much that happens in it.
So yeah, they must have written and drawn this years ago.
Yeah, there is definitely a sense that they have been working on this concept for a very long time. And so it sort of reminds me of Neil Gaiman-y American Gods type stuff, because this is all to do with like angels and demons who live on our planet. And we get to see scenes set in the past during sort of the Tower of Babel and stuff like that.
Yep.
And... then also the story set now where these the seven deadly sins are targeting this one dude's kid. And it's really like, I like this book because it has a real sort of urgency to it, the contemporary scenes, because it's like they are chasing this dude and his baby has just been born. His baby is a newborn. And maybe I'm just extra sensitive to that at the moment, but it's really emotional and it's really beautifully drawn, really well realized. I really enjoy this. It seems so silly, but I really like it.
I don't know why I dropped it. I think I just forgot to get a few issues. And because it's so big, it's just like, oh, I'll just wait for a trade.
It's a big read, every issue, but I think it's super worthwhile. If that sort of thing appeals to you, I think it's worth tracking down.
What's the cover price on each issue?
$4.99. So it is a bit more expensive, but you are getting a huge amount of story in each issue.
Awesome. So I read two more Image books, and they were, one of them was Manifest Destiny, issue number 32, written by Chris Dingus, Matthew Roberts, and then art by Tony Akins and Owen Gianni. Sorry, art by Matthew Roberts, Tony Akins, and Owen Gianni. Just written by Chris Dingus. And this kind of pushes the plot forward, in which we are kind of, you know, we're following Burke and Wills on their... I did it again. Fuck.
The American Burke and Wills.
Yeah, America's answer to Burke and Wills. Who are the fucking explorers again? God, this sucks. Every time I do it too, you would think I would remember.
I think I'd remember.
Yeah, from how many times you have to remind me that it's not Burke and Wills. Oh, God damn it.
Same basic concept, though.
Yeah.
Bunch of white guys being like, we discovered this.
Yep.
Now, can you get a colored person to come and help us?
Look, this comic's really, really good as they make their way from one coast of America to the other. And I'm actually like Googling Lewis and Clark.
There we go.
Lewis and Clark. There we go. But in this, they've kind of collected a bunch of other characters along their journeys, and one of them is a French woman who has been, I can't remember if she was attacked or raped earlier in the series, but this is like the first half of this book is narrated by her completely in French, and so I spent the first half kind of like trying to pick words that I could recognize out of the French language, not only to realize that there was a full translation at the end of the book. But basically it's a tale of vengeance. And quite a satisfying one at that. So yeah,
love
definitely.
Tales of vengeance.
Yeah, it was, and this is a really, really good one. It felt very different to all of the issues that have come previous to this one. Probably the most I've enjoyed Manifest Destiny since the first 18 issues or so.
Cool.
Yeah, cool issue. And finally I read Lazarus X plus 66, which is the interim kind of one-shot series set within the Lazarus universe that Greg Rucka and Eric Troutman are telling in between the main series, while Michael Lark...
just has a rest.
Yeah, well, I mean, not really. He drew half of Batman this week.
Oh, yeah.
but he's been having guest artists for each one-shot, and this one had Bilquis Everly. And was exquisite.
I did see this on her Instagram.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful.
It's so good. And so this was really, really cool. Again, very, very different to all the issues that have come before it. This one was all about Sarai Cooper, who is a reporter. And she is known throughout Carlisle territory, which is like kind of the main family that we see the story based in. She's known as the face of the past. This is basically her kind of trying to make it as a reporter, having to do dumb fluff pieces while also trying to expose the truth behind one of the missing family members. She, in fact, uncovers that he is not what everyone thinks he is, which is dead at the beginning of the issue.
Right.
On the way there, we just meet and see her kind of like, you know, do different tricks to kind of get all different sides of the story. Or kind of, you know, even use her body to kind of get where she wants. It was a really, really different kind of... I feel like of all the characters that we've met in this, this was the most that I can imagine existing today in our world.
Okay.
Whereas all the other ones feel like they're a necessity to come out of a really, really dire, you know, semi-post-apocalyptic kind of... not quite apocalyptic, but like, you know, in the Lazarus world, all of the world is divided up by the families and people like us live as filth.
I am.
A waste.
It's nice to be recognized as such.
So there's one more of these one-shots left before we get regular Lazarus back, which is pretty, pretty exciting. It's been quite a great miniseries.
Yeah, it's so weird that this is like the one Rucka book that I don't read.
You should binge. It's a good little binge read.
Yeah.
In all that spare time you got.
I have to finish Final Crisis.
Are
we DC now?
DC now. We've got the one DC book that came out this week that didn't have a one on it, and that is the Batman Annual number 2, which was written by Tom King with returning artist Lee Weeks, who we previously worked with on the extremely, like, surprisingly great Batman Elmer Fudd book, which pains you every time I say how good it was.
Just didn't like it that much.
I'm nominating that as, like, one of the best single issues of the year.
Yeah, everyone's going to vote for it just because they hate me.
And then we also had Michael Lark showing up to do the kind of epilogue on this issue too.
And colors by Elizabeth Breitwiser.
Oh, really?
Ghost Story? Yep.
Fucking didn't see
Chung
that.
In the second. Yeah, that's why it's gorgeous.
That's why it's so good, isn't it? Wow. What a great lineup of creators.
Absolutely.
So this ties in really well to the current story that King is telling in Batman, the ongoing series at the moment, in which Batman and Catwoman are going to get married. And so this one, like, we know that they both remember different first meetings. Mm-hmm. Batman's is more in line with the Golden Age first meeting of Catwoman, whereas Catwoman remembers the Frank Miller Year One story as their first meeting. This one tells, like, their early adventures together, in which Catwoman just continually breaks into the Batcave and leaves mice around. Just to like tease Batman,
just to
basically
test him, just to make him better, make him stronger, show him where his weaknesses are.
Exactly. I really loved that, like, adding that to their backstory. I thought it was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the book, and look, if you don't want to be spoiled for this issue, skip forward a few minutes. You can see on the tag when we start talking about Marvel Comics, just skip to that. But I think, you know, this is like one of those very special issues that I would like to talk about in depth. The book ends with, the first story ends with, I guess, their first kiss. Is it their first? Yeah, it is their first kiss. And then we jump forward to, I guess, their last kiss, because we see Batman and Catwoman have grown old together. They have a daughter who they've named Helena, which is what they
Helena
named.
Helena Bertinelli.
That's what they named their daughter in Earth 2.
Yeah.
We jump forward and we see that Bruce is sick.
Yep.
And there's nothing anyone can do to save him.
He's old.
He's just lived a happy life. And yep. he's so grateful to have had a loving family, especially Selina. And he dies and leaves her a present. And, like, I thought this was a really, really special book that was, like, you know, the usual Tom King trying to get inside the head of all the characters, even if you don't really want to get inside their heads.
Just trying to make everyone cry. But as per usual, Tom King trying to make everyone cry.
But this had a lot of heart.
Did have a lot of heart.
And I think, you know, if I were to criticize any of his works, is that they are somewhat lacking in the heart department sometimes. Not all the time.
Too much heart.
What's that, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
So
you're lacking in the heart department.
Yes.
What did you think, Siobhan?
I did like this issue a lot. It's sort of... I thought it was good. I don't think it was, like, incredible. You know, like, I think it was good. I think that it was kind of... Sometimes I feel like Tom King is just trying to, like, get an emotional response in a really easy way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he achieved that. I don't know if it was necessarily that satisfying for me. And also because this is, like it's a great annual. It's a great single issue. It's a great potential, possible future kind of story. I don't mind that stuff. And it looks beautiful.
Yeah. Well, for me, this resonated because I feel like everyone has been kind of saying, oh, this marriage isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. Like, you know, how long is this going to last? And I love that even if it doesn't, in terms of regular continuity, last longer than a year or whatever, Tom King pretty much said with this issue, fuck it, it lasts forever.
It lasts
until the end, and that's that. And I really, really enjoyed that, because even if, you know, he's just kind of added a weird little footnote to the long-term bat history, he's still able to tell the end of the story. To the point where I would love to see stories told in that world now that Bruce has finally passed on, what happens next?
Like, does his daughter take on the mantle?
Like, yeah, exactly.
What's that? That sounds cool. Yeah. Actually, now I'm way on board with that. Make that happen.
I think, like, you know, getting there, I loved, like, the kind of adding a little bit of history to them.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like...
Lee Weeks is obviously a huge talent.
Why isn't he, like... Why are we just getting these weird, like... random bursts of Lee Weeks in, like, terms of annuals and specials? He could, like, hold his own regular Bat book so well. Like, he's such a good artist. There wasn't a bad panel in this.
No, beautiful. And Michael Lark does an incredible job of the future stuff as well.
Yeah, but, like, this is no slight on Michael Lark, who I really, really enjoy. Michael Lark's work looks like shit compared to Weeks. Like, I love Lark. I can't wait for him to return to Lazarus. But, like, it doesn't look like shit. I mean, I'm being overly dramatic.
Yeah.
But, like, Weeks is just, like...
It's real beautiful. That first kiss page is like beautiful.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
And definitely another character artist who's who's been benefited from the use of Brightweiser colors.
Absolutely. Yeah, she does incredible work.
That's gonna be one of the hardest things to vote on at the end of the year is the best colorist.
Yeah.
Because I love. I mean, I think for me, Belair's always going to be up there.
Yeah.
Matt Wilson has done some great work this year as always, but then in terms of, like, newer colorists. Elizabeth Brightweiser and Tamra Bonvian, like, they're like they're like so recognizable. In I can't believe I didn't recognize this as Breitweiser, but like Tamara, I always like her colors are so perfect, like for the books that she does them on. So yeah, that'll be a fun award to vote on.
Good annual.
Yeah, really good annual. Like, I mean, this was a week of like super like three very different annuals: Super Sons, Aquaman, and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all like exactly what I want out of an annual. Even like either like you know this cool Elseworlds story, something that like is able to tell like an extended take on the current kind of status mm-hmm. quo, which is what Batman did, and then just like a really really fun. Silly kind of extended story in Super Sons.
Yep. Good annuals.
Yeah, I mean, good fifth week for DC. DC are notorious at just kind of going, oh, fuck, what do we do? Just put this out.
Mm.
So now we're going to talk about Marvel. And we have a couple more Marvel books than we did DC.
I only have three, though.
Well, should we talk about the legacy book, which is Darkhawk?
Yes,
let's The Return. Do that. This week we got issue number 51 of the longtime missing Darkhawk. We last saw the character... in Avengers Arena.
Yeah. But a different version of the character, right?
No, isn't that just Darkhawk?
I thought Darkhawk was a girl.
No. You need to reread Avengers Arena.
Clearly. Wasn't there a lady Darkhawk?
No, Darkhawk is like, he's in Avengers Arena. He doesn't understand why he's in the arena because he's so much older than everyone else. And then he ends up, his like jewel or whatever the fuck it is, the diamond thing that he wears around his neck in this issue is stolen from him, and Chase becomes Darkhawk for a while.
Right.
Good series, everyone. We recommend it very often, but Avengers Arena is one of the coolest Marvel series from recent memory.
It is really good.
So this Darkhawk, The Return, part one of one, is written by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims, whose book we really loved, just finished last week, Sword Quest. They wrote that. And art is by Kev Walker with colors by...
I fucking love Kev
He's so
Walker.
Good, isn't he?
He was on Avengers Arena.
That's right. Java Tartaglia did colors on this one. And this catches us up with the character of... what's his name? Chris something? Chris Powell, who since being separated from the weird amulet... that gives him his Darkhawk powers. He's not able to become Darkhawk anymore. And so he has become a cop, like his father. And he has regular nightmares about becoming Darkhawk and his time in the past as Darkhawk. But his girlfriend, who he wants to marry, or is he? Is it his wife? Whatever.
No, I think they're about to get married.
Fiancé. Is like, hey, just throw away the amulet. It's fucking useless. Like, you need to let go of these dreams. And then so he is called to, like while he's, you know, working the beat, he's called to check out a situation happening at the amusement park, which is where he found the amulet in the first place, and became Darkhawk for the first time. And while he's there, he is kind of told to become a dirty cop alongside some other dirty cops, and he refuses, and then a bunch of aliens show up. And I thought this was like a really cool little one-shot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I really liked it.
I thought, yeah, I mean, Kev Walker's art is so goddamn good.
He's so good. And it's even like another artist that you've got, I feel like I've seen develop over the last couple of years. I feel like his art's just become that much more sophisticated.
Definitely.
I think it's beautiful. I would love to see Kev Walker doing more Marvel comics again.
Well, I mean, he's been doing Dr. Aphra all year.
Oh, yeah. I just don't read that.
but yeah, that's I mean, me. This is the only one of the kind of Marvel legacy one-shots that I finished. And I was like, I would like to see this become a regular series. I'm ready for a Darkhawk book.
Bring Darkhawk back.
And there's so many other cosmic books that he could be brought into as well.
Totally.
So this is a good issue.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Good on you, Darkhawk. We got another issue of Moon Knight this week. The second issue of the new run by Max Bemis and Jason Burrows.
Oh my God, I love Jason Burrows.
Which is crazy because like, you know, my first introduction to him was Crossed.
Weird.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense that he's kind of drawing the most violent Marvel hero.
Mm.
And there is like, you know, I mean, just on that brilliant cover, which is just Moon Knight with blood splattered fists. But I think there is a great level of restraint, on hand in this issue.
Yeah. There is so much that I'm enjoying about this. I think this was a killer issue.
Me too.
And I think it looks great. I love that Moon Knight has become this character that allows a writer to just... not ignore, but put their own take on the character and change things up. I love the way that they're using the multiple personalities. I don't know the correct terminology.
Well, neither does the book, so it's fine.
Cool.
Because he talks about multiple personality disorder. And I know
it's
that,
supposed to be disassociated.
Yeah, I think they've retconned that. Really, yeah, sure. But who knows?
Anyway.
I think, like, in terms of just it being a comic book thing that you are able to,
yeah.
Like, I know that, like, if you are someone that suffers from it, it probably is a term that you want to get away from, but
absolutely.
I get why you would use it in the term of a comic book.
Absolutely. And I think that the way that they have distinguished between the different personalities in the comic is incredibly clever. Jason Varese does some really subtle visual cues when Moon Knight is the different personalities, even if it's just the way that he holds his chin up or his posture is different.
Or how much of his mask he reveals, yeah. As well. What I loved most about this issue is that it's narrated by Khonshu,
yes.
Who is the Egyptian god that, does he possess Mark Spector? I don't even know.
I don't even know anymore.
But I love it. It's like, it's really, really, like, it's quite a funny narration as he kind of, like, you know, says, like, you know, he suffers from multiple personality disorder, like, who could blame him with me stuck in his head all the time? And
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's really, really funny. There's so much to love about this new direction that this series has taken with
Absolutely.
Moon Knight. It feels like where, like, you know, Lemire's run was so wonderful. It definitely felt like it was written in almost, it could have been a graphic novel exploration mm-hmm. of the character. Mm-hmm. Whereas this feels like taking what worked from Lemire's run in terms of exploration of personality and being, but then also just making it a proper superhero comic as well.
Absolutely.
And even, like, you know, I never read past Warren Ellis's issues on the run that he started.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
They were, like, you know, absolutely just these, like, very short stories that you could tell never develop into anything, whereas this has, like, proper big cliffhangers. You mm-hmm. could tell, you can definitely see other Marvel characters crossing over with this format and being dealt with in a very unique way.
And it's almost like a horror book.
Yes. Yeah.
And the villain is really compelling, and I love the colors, the decisions in terms of how they color those pages. I think that's really clever. Matt Lopez is the colorist on this book.
Yep.
Yeah, I flippin' love this book. I think yep. it's so good.
Definitely. One of the best issues that I read all week. I managed to save this one till close to the end.
A good call.
Yeah. But yeah, man, if you ever read a Moon Knight book, like, pick up the first issue of this run.
Yeah.
And just enjoy great superhero horror comics.
Yep. Agreed.
I think it does a lot to explain the history of Moon Knight just mm-hmm. in two issues while also forwarding the story in a really, really satisfying pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Such good, like, for this to be, like, a relatively new writer mm-hmm. in Bemis and, like, for him to be writing so masterfully already is so awesome. Yeah.
Agreed.
He's going to be everywhere if this book continues, like, to be this good. Can't you just see him just being, like, put on something enormous after this?
And then becoming shit.
All right. also through Marvel this week, we got a couple of X-books. X-Men Blue. Now,
I read this one.
Yeah, I put both X-books on the chopping block. And I ended up still enjoying X-Men Gold enough to keep reading that.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men Blue was, you know, everyone was just, like, losing sleep. Is Levin's going to keep reading X-Men Blue?
I was on the edge of my seat.
I did. Even though I did not particularly enjoy this issue, something happens towards the end of it and I can't not read it just in case what I hope happens happens.
What do you hope happens?
That these time displaced X-Men get sent back for good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're threatening, but I would be shocked if that actually happened. Although there are about to be a whole bunch of new weird X-books, so who can say?
Yeah.
Who's in that X-Men red team? Jean Grey. Jean Grey? This version of Jean Grey?
No.
The original Jean Grey, yeah. More on her in a minute.
Maybe they are going to do that.
Because I just think, like, that the X-Men is one of those properties that has so many characters.
Absolutely.
That you don't need to bring back alternate versions. I mean, they have so many alternate versions of each character already. You don't need time-displaced characters as well.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's, like, maybe, like, of all the, you know, people love to complain about stupid decisions Marvel make all the time. I think that's, for me, like, one of the dumbest decisions ever.
It's a bad call.
Bringing back the time displaced X-Men.
Yeah, it was a bad call.
And keeping it. Like, it's fine for, like, an arc.
Yeah.
But not for forever.
No.
For as long as it's taken. So I'm going to continue with this just to see where this goes.
Yeah. Guys, spoilers. They go to 2099.
Yeah. Weird.
Weird.
But in spite of what I just said about X-Men Blue and the time displaced X-Men, I love Jean Grey. The comic that's written by Dennis Hopeless. Did you not read it this week?
I didn't get up to it. I'm sorry. I know it was a small week, but I still missed a couple of things.
It's fine. You're back at work. You got a kid. Victor Ivanez on art, colors by J. David Ramos. Jean Grey, this whole comic has been her readying herself, this young, time-displaced Jean Grey readying herself for the Phoenix coming to Earth and basically coming to her. She regularly talks to the voice of the old Jean Grey, who is kind of stuck in her brain too. And in the last issue, we saw her go to Emma Frost for help, but instead she just kind of, the two of them try to steal something from Emma Frost's mind to ready Jean Grey for the Phoenix. And basically this issue ends with the Phoenix, like, not coming to Earth. The Phoenix is on Earth now.
Oh, hectic.
And it's up to an incredible team up of two Jean Greys, Cuckoo Sisters, Emma Frost and Quentin Quire and Hope Summers to take down the Phoenix.
That's pretty fun.
That's really, really fun. And this whole book has just been very, very fun. It looks great. Jean Grey's hair is really nice, but Hope
Which
is...
Which one?
The time displaced chair.
She's got a cute little bob.
I think it's a real good decision to give her cool hair.
You're like, I don't think it was a good idea to bring her back to this universe, but if you did have to, I'm glad you gave her a cute bob with a fringe.
They didn't give it to her immediately.
No.
Yeah, she had to develop
it. She had
to
get sassy first.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed Jean Grey issue number 9. Finally, I read the final issue of US Avengers. Mm-hmm. This kind of almost brings it to a close, this long run that Al Ewing has had since, like, Mighty Avengers. Mm-hmm. I think it was the first Avengers book he wrote, and then he kind of turned that into the Ultimates, and then he had New Avengers, and then USA Avengers, and then it's all been kind of like cycling through the same characters. And it's been pretty great. But this kind of brings to the end the weird arc where they're trapped in a parallel kind of world that's like Archie, where everyone's being forced to live out
an Archie
kind of world. And I realized that, like, I don't like this book when it is telling these short arcs. I like it way more when it's building up to something very epic.
Yeah.
So it ends kind of like a bit of a, like, oh, whatever. Certainly wasn't bad, but it wasn't as fun as this run has been in the lead up to this. But this now means that I think all the Avengers books are about to come to a close before Al Ewing, Mark Waid, and Jim Zub write the Avengers No Surrender book, which is going to be weekly next year.
Oh, good.
So it's going to be, instead of getting like 4 Avengers books a month, we're going to get 1 Avengers book a week.
I'm just anti-weekly superhero comics, but...
We'll see where this goes. I'm going to give it a chance because...
why not? You have to.
Yeah, of course we do. But I mean, like, I haven't loved what... It's funny that of all those writers, Wade's definitely done the least exciting Avengers stuff. Mm. I love what Zub is doing on Uncanny Avengers now with the funny, sexy soap opera vibe that it has.
Yep.
And I've really enjoyed the just complete insanity of what Al Ewing's been able to do with his run. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with Avengers No Surrender. Those are our Marvel reviews. All we've got left is a very, very small handful. It's not even a handful. It's like a fingerful.
Yeah.
We've got 2 more comics to talk about from other publishers this week. First of which is through Valiant. The second issue of Eternity, written by Matt Kint, with art by Trevor Hairsine, plus Ryan Wynn and David Barron. This is probably the most cosmic Valiant has ever gotten,
mm-hmm.
In which we see the two characters of the two cosmonauts, Abram and Mishka,
mm-hmm.
One of the cosmonauts became Infinity. Is that what his name is? Or not Infinity.
Divinity.
But this is
Abram is Divinity. Mishka is just Mishka.
Okay, sure. Their son was stolen in the first issue, and this is them traveling to the ends of the cosmos in an attempt to get their son back.
Is good fun.
This is crazy fun. This is like. Just, you know, I know we read a lot of cosmic bullshit, but this is extremely cosmic bullshit.
This is like Grant Morrison level cosmic bullshit.
Yeah.
Because it's like slightly meta and about like the balance of light and dark and the future and the past and whether we look forward or look back.
Yeah, I loved that. So the world that Abram and Mishka currently find themselves in is made of two halves, the half of the future light and the half of the past light. The future light see only what is to come. They think about tomorrow. They see destiny as immovable, unavoidable. There is no choice, no mystery, only what must come to be. And then there is the past light. We see the infinite light and cosmos of the past, what has happened and what has been. We believe in choice, in a future that is not written until we choose to write it. We study the past in order that we not repeat it. I thought that was such a great way to divide a world.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a fun little thing to add to this already very complicated story, but it makes it less complicated, I guess.
Totally. I really like this, and the art's gorgeous.
Yeah, Trevor Hairsine's a really unique artist, and the color palette on this book. Another very pink and purple book, but a very beautiful pink and purple book. Great series from Valiant. And finally, last book we're going to talk about on the show is Heavy Vinyl, number 4.
What's Heavy Vinyl? I've never heard of that.
It's the renamed Hi-Fi Fight Club.
Because Chuck Palin, whatever his name is a little wiener.
He is. And he got his little wiener on the phone and said, they need to rename the book because...
I know. I only do all the fight clubs.
The only first rule about Fight Club is no one else gets to call their book Fight Club.
Anyway.
So now it's called Heavy Vinyl. This is a book about a young girl who starts working at a record store, falls in love with one of the other workers at the store, and also learns that when the store's shut, all the girls have a underground fight club, and it's them solving mysteries by fighting, and they're all like music-related mysteries.
Yes, it's very, and this mystery is very, I don't know if I've mentioned before that I really like the Josie and the Pussycats movie, but this is very much that vibe of like pop music being used for nefarious ends.
The big labels have started chipping their musicians, so they can't put messages they can't say anything of worth in their music anymore. Mm. And so up to the not Hi-Fi Fight Club to put a stop to this.
Yeah.
This is the end of this book.
What?
Yeah, as in like, I guess it'll return. It just says at the end, it says the end for now.
Oh no!
So I don't know how long of wait we're going to have for this book to return.
Oh man!
But it ends kind of like not that excitingly, I guess.
It ends with them like wanting to start a band,
which is way less interesting than them having a fight club.
Yeah, totally.
But you know, whatever. I guess it'll have a little time off and then hopefully come back. It's written by Carly Usden, pencils by Nina Vekueva, and inks by Irene Flores, with colors by Rebecca Nolte, with Kieran Quigley and Walter Biamonte. It's a really, really sweet, beautiful look at book, and I recommend the trade to anyone who's
absolutely
ever enjoyed a boombox book in the past, because I feel like you enjoy one, you should at least give a shot to the others, because they're all quite similar in good feeling times.
Yep, yeah. Agreed. It's a good read.
Those are all the reviews that we're going to give you this week, but we are also going to give you some recommendations for books that we will review in the future, because this week you'll be able to find a whole bunch of new series starting out on the stands. We get the Barbarella series starting.
Yes!
Is that a Dynamite book? I think it's a Dynamite book.
Yeah, it's a Dynamite book.
Which will be great. We can't wait to hear Siobhan talk about boobs next
week.
We get a whole bunch of Christmas specials, including the DC Universe Holiday Special.
Christmas boobs.
Faith's Winter Wonderland. one of our favorite books from last year, the Grant Morrison and... Who did the art on
that one? Mora.
Dan Mora. Claus, or Klaus, which we called it for some reason. But Claus and the Crisis in Christmasville.
Yeah.
Santa Claus returns. The real
but
world
muscly,
Santa Claus story.
Muscly, sexy
the
Santa Claus.
Grounded, muscly Santa Claus. That's
sorry,
amazing.
I just ran over some bubble wrap in great. My excitement.
You just farted. Everyone knows that. what do you
I was just going to say quickly, if any Sydney-based ladies... Claus is the Christmas book for Queens of Kings.
Right. So if you're someone who identifies as a woman that would like to talk about Claus with other group of people that also identify as women,
yep.
You should get to the next meetup and read a great book.
Which is happening soon.
Siobhan's going to talk about that in a second.
It's good.
Queens of Kings. It's
Queens
like
of
your,
Kings
your
is
regular
the group.
meetup.
Yeah, we do it monthly. Shout out to Megan for running it. Being admin of our conversation group, which you can also join, which is good.
Do you even
we
have
talk
a URL
a lot about
for that yet?
But, sorry?
Do you even have an URL for the Queens of Kings group
oh,
yet?
Oh, God, you can't ask me that. December 17th is our next one. We do it on a Sunday at 5:30 at King's Comics. It is great.
Awesome. We also get some new image series. One of them is called Paradiso. One of them is called Sleepless. Will they break the Image number one curse that we are currently in the middle of and be good Image number ones? Because there's been a few shockers lately. Then we've got a whole bunch of other series, new issues of books that we already love, like The Return of Black Cloud. And we get the Rocco's Modern Life series started too.
Yay.
Lots of good stuff next week. And you can find all the comics coming out this week and all the comics that we talked about on the show at King's Comics, 310 Pitt Street in Sydney, or at the website kingscomics.com. Even the more weird, obscure ones, you'll be able to find there too. So go check it out. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us online at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast or join our group and talk about all the dumb things that we said at facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. You can find Siobhan on Twitter, which she's actually going to use now, SiobhanCBG.
Yay!
And I'm at LevDog, LevDawg. They're also our usernames for Twitter. If you ever want to see pictures of my children and not Siobhan's children, that's where you go. finally, if you want to send us an email with your ideas for who we should give awards to, seriousissues@kingscomics.com. Maybe put in the subject, forward this to Levens, so it isn't forgotten about.
I'll do it now. I'm at work. Christ.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, this is Levens. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevens.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.